Milestones in 19th Century Firearms Development, Part 7, by Tom Pudding. The Single Shot Cartridge Rifle. Image. 1889 MK.577 450 Martini Henry with sling and triangular section bayonet. Introduction. By the 1860s it had become obvious that the days of the muzzle-loading firearm were numbered and that any government that failed to rearm its troops with breech-loaders would quickly be left behind in the international arms race. This realization was confirmed when in 1864 the Danes, armed with muzzle-loaders, were decisively and rapidly defeated by Prussian troops equipped with the von Drees needle gun. France responded to this threat by producing its own version of the needle gun designed by Antoine-Alphonse Chassepot, which, although a marked improvement on the von Drees, was nevertheless obsolete by the time it was adopted in 1866. The Chassepot, like the von Drees, used a complex paper cartridge that was labor-intensive to produce but, due to a reduction in caliber to 11 mm and an increased powder charge of 85 grains, had the advantages of greater range and flatter trajectory. The bolt was sealed by easily replaceable India rubber washers that were compressed on firing, and needle erosion was minimized by putting the percussion cap in the base of the cartridge rather than just behind the bullet. Only the Prussians and the French developed needle guns, and after the Franco-Prussian War of 1870-71, both countries abandoned them. The Prussians for the model 1871 Mauser and the French for the 1874 Graz, both of which fired self-contained metallic cartridges. The Schneider Rifle 1866-1871. Image. 1871.577 Schneider Enfield 3-band conversion. In 1864 the British Board of Ordnance, having accepted the need for a breech-loading rifle, set up a competition to find the best way of converting the existing stocks of .577 muzzle-loading Enfields to breech-loading as a stopgap measure until such time as a purpose-designed rifle could be introduced. Of the six shortlisted competitors, only the rifle submitted by the American Jacob Schneider was intended to fire metallic cartridges, the others having opted for capping breech-loaders using paper cartridges. At this time there was a great deal of prejudice against the use of cartridges that contained a percussion cap, as they were thought by many to be inherently dangerous and liable to explode at the slightest provocation, despite this having been proven not to be the case during the American Civil War. Schneider's conversion was simple, effective and above all cheap. It involved removing 2.5 inches from the rear of the Enfield barrel, machining a chamber to accept a cartridge and fitting a side-hinged mechanism that contained a firing pin activated by the original hammer. Image. The Schneider breech conversion shown open and ready to receive a cartridge. To load the rifle, a cartridge, originally made with an iron base and a cardboard body and later of drawn brass, was pushed into the chamber, the breech mechanism was closed and the hammer was cocked ready to fire. As the cartridge contained its own primer, there was no longer a need to put a cap on an external nipple. Image. Here, with the breech closed, you can see how the hammer struck the angled firing pin. To reload, the hammer was first pulled back to half-cock and the breech was opened and pulled back against a spring to extract the spent case, which fell out when the rifle was tipped over sideways. Image. Spent Schneider cases are extracted by pulling the mechanism rearward. After some initial problems with the ammunition had been rectified, the Schneider, which eventually proved to be more accurate and to have a much faster rate of fire than the Enfield, was accepted in 1866. I have to say though that I have not yet seen anyone with a Schneider shoot it with anything like the degree of accuracy of an Enfield muzzle loader. The Schneider saw action in Napier's Abyssinian campaign of 1868, where at Oroghi between 300 and 400 members of the 4th, King's Own, regiment defeated an attack by 7,000 warriors by waiting until they were in the ballistic danger zone before opening fire at a rate of 30-40 aimed shots per second, a previously unheard of rate of fire. Some Indian Army units and the Royal Ulster Constabulary were still using the Snider up to the turn of the century, so much for it being a temporary stopgap. The .577-450 Martini Henry, 1871-1888. Image. Martini Henry at the range, breech open with a cartridge ready to be chambered. The 1866 committee that recommended the introduction of the Snider conversion also determined that a permanent breech loader, as opposed to the temporary Enfield conversion, be sought. Accordingly, the committee sent a circular letter to all leading gunsmiths asking for their proposals for a breech-loading rifle with the main stipulation that, in accordance with Whitworth's principles, the caliber must be 450 inches. Although more than 100 rifles were submitted for consideration, none was considered acceptable so, in late 1867. Another competition with prizes of £1,000 and £500 was announced, this time comprising two separate elements, breech mechanism and barrel, with a view to finding the best composite rifle from all the submissions. After exhaustive trials, the committee decided that the breech mechanism submitted by the Swiss-Hungarian weapons manufacturer Friedrich von Martini mated to the barrel rifling system developed by the Scottish gunmaker Alexander Henry was the best all-round solution. This decision proved controversial as the Martini action worked on the same principle as that designed by the American Henry O. Peabody, who had patented it in 1862. However, the Peabody breech had an external hammer, whereas the Martini had an internal striker that cocked automatically when the action was opened, and the matter was never tested in the courts. The first batch of 200 new .450 long chamber Martini rifles was issued to selected units of the Army and the Royal Navy for trials in 1869, and immediately problems were encountered with the ammunition. The original cartridge was of rolled brass foil construction, which when elongated to contain 85 grains of powder became too long, flimsy and liable to distortion in service. To overcome this, a modified bottle-shaped cartridge whose base was 577 in diameter necked down to 450 in was introduced. With the rifle chambered to accept it and with a shorter breech block, this rifle, known as .577-450 short chamber Martini Henry, was approved in June 1871. In service, the Marquis rifle was found to have a number of minor design deficiencies, and most of these rifles were recalled for conversion to the Mk2 specification approved in 1877. The main difference between the Mki-2 rifles and the Mk3 of 1879 lay in the method of attaching the forend, the former with a transverse steel pin and the latter by means of a hooked metal plate fixed in front of the trigger guard with two wood screws. Carbines were produced in cavalry, garrison and artillery versions from 1877. Image. Military weapons carry a lot more information than their commercial counterparts. Here under the crown you can see VR for Victoria Regina, during whose reign it was made. The manufacturer Birmingham Small Arms and Metal Company, year 1889, the lock viewer's inspection mark, the model designation, Mark II, and a 2 to show that it has been downgraded to second class. The teardrop cocking indicator shows that the action is cocked. The final Mk4 version of the rifle was originally produced in .402 caliber, but due to the logistical problems of supplying so many different calibers, the new .303 rifle was under development at the time. These were recalled before issue and bored out to .577-450. Mk4 rifles are easily recognized by their longer operating levers, designed to give extra leverage for the extraction of dirty cases, and by the distinct hump at the rear of the action that provided a more comfortable grip. The Martini Henry saw action around the world, but its main battle honors and iconic status were won during the Zulu Wars, when 150 soldiers armed with Martini Henrys beat off a force of more than 4,000 Zulus during the heroic defense of Rorke's Drift in January 1879. In 2000, a vast hoard of 19th century firearms was discovered in the Lagansile Khana Palace in Kathmandu, Nepal. The entire cache, which filled 30 shipping containers, was purchased by an American company, International Military Antiques, for $5 million. My rifle was part of this shipment, having been produced by BSA as part of a special contract for the Nepalese government 10 years after the MK2 version had been replaced. It has a superb bore and appears to have had very little use. Image. The crudely stamped inscription on the barrel indicates it is for native service, Nepal. With the development and issue of the .303 Lee Metford bolt action magazine rifle, which was approved in 1888, the single-shot Martini Henry became obsolete, but it nevertheless continued to serve with distinction in the far-flung outposts of the British Empire well into the 20th century, and Illichinock was still producing commercial cordite ammunition in .577-450 in the 1950s. Many rifles and carbines were converted to .303, Martini Metford and Martini Enfield, and the government donated a large number of surplus rifles and carbines for conversion by Bonehill and Greener into .22 civilian training rifles prior to the Great War. A number of commercial manufacturers also produced versions of the Martini Henry in .577-450 for sale to civilians and foreign governments. Martini Henry ammunition. The original cartridges issued to the soldiers at Isandlwana and Rorke's Drift were made with an iron base to which was cemented a rather flimsy body made from a strip of thin, rolled brass. The case held 85 grains of black powder together with a beeswax lubricating disc and a 480-grain paper-patched lead bullet made from an alloy of 1 part tin to 12 parts lead. This bullet would penetrate a quarter-inch iron plate at 200 yards or 14 half-inch elm planks. Image. Cartridge, small arm, ball, Martini Henry rifle, solid case, Mark II. Because of the excessive recoil when used with the lighter carbine versions, a modified carbine cartridge with a lighter 410-grain bullet, indicated by an orange paper patch, and a reduced powder charge of 70 grains was introduced in 1877. The cartridges were interchangeable in an emergency. Image. Early rolled brass, short chamber Boxer Henry cartridges showing their flimsy construction when compared with the later, solid drawn brass case, below. These early cartridges proved problematic in action, particularly where firing was intense and the rifle's chamber grew hot and fouled with powder residues. In such cases, the thin brass could separate from the base and remain welded to the inside of the chamber and almost impossible to remove without an armorer's assistance, thus rendering the rifle useless. This problem was experienced by the Khartoum Relief Column in the Sudan in 1882, leading to Sir Garnet Wallace's demand that drawn brass cartridges be provided as a matter of urgency. Image. One of my .577-450 drawn brass cartridges with a 22LR cartridge for comparison. Both the .577 Snyder and .577-450 Martini Henry cartridges are listed as obsolete calibers under Section 58(2) of the Firearms Act 1968, meaning that Snyder and Martini Henry rifles and carbines that retain their original chambering are classified as antiques, which, provided there is no attempt or intention to bring them back into use, may be purchased without a firearms certificate. FAC. If you do want to shoot a Snyder or a Martini Henry and have included it on your FAC, then your only option is to make your own ammunition, and for this you need specialist equipment and knowledge. Reloading for the Martini Henry. As you can see, the .577-450 cartridge is huge, and accordingly the dies that are used to reform the brass cases to their original size after firing are very large and require a substantial bench-mounted press for this purpose. The cheapest brass cases are made from reformed Brazilian 24-gauge shotgun shells that must be repeatedly annealed and passed through dies to change their shape. The best purpose-made cases are made in England by Kynock, but at £7.39 each at the time of writing, they don't come cheap. As bullet diameters were reduced and muzzle velocities increased to give flatter and more lethal trajectories in the 1860s, problems were experienced with leading of the bore where lead was deposited in the rifling, causing reduced accuracy and difficulty in subsequent cleaning. To overcome this, someone had the bright idea of wrapping an undersized bullet in a paper jacket or patch that would fill the rifling grooves, thereby preventing the lead bullet from contacting the steel barrel. The paper patch falls off the bullet as it leaves the muzzle and does not adversely affect accuracy. Image. Here, straight-sided, 480-grain, cup-based bullets are being paper patched. Saliva-moistened paper is wrapped exactly twice around the bullet. The twisted tail is snipped off and they are then left to dry overnight before being loaded into the charged cartridges. The cleaned brass cases are first decapped to remove the old primers before being necksized in the die to reform the neck so that the patched bullet will be a snug fit when loaded. Another die puts a very slight flare on the case mouth so that the paper patch will not be damaged when the bullet is pressed into the case. While this is being done, a new primer is pressed into the primer pocket in the base of the cartridge, which is then ready to be loaded. Image. The components of a Martini Henry cartridge from left to right, new large rifle primer, cleaned, neck sized and flared brass case, 85 grains of black powder, cotton wool filler, card disc, 1/4 in grease cookie, 2 more card discs, paper patched bullet. The components of a Martini Henry cartridge from left to right, new large rifle primer, cleaned, neck sized and flared brass case, 85 grains of black powder, cotton wool filler, card disc, 1/4 in grease cookie, 2 more card discs, paper patched bullet. It is vital with black powder weapons to ensure that there is no air gap between the powder and the bullet, as this risks creating a pressure spike that could bulge or burst the barrel. To prevent this, cotton wool is packed down tightly over the powder and a card disc is inserted at the base of the cartridge neck. Next to lubricant cookie, whose purpose is to keep the barrel fouling soft, is inserted, followed by 2 further card discs. The bullet can now be pressed into the required depth using a bullet seating die, but usually they can be pushed in with finger pressure. As commercial .577 450 ammunition is no longer available and making the ammunition is such a laborious and time-consuming business, Martini Henrys are not all that common at the range, but they are such fun to shoot that the time and effort involved is certainly worthwhile. Shooting the Martini Henry. Image. The Martini action. The breech block is pivoted at the rear and drops when the lever is lowered to allow access to the chamber, at the same time cocking the internal striker. SX in front of the breech indicates that a strengthened extractor has been fitted. It has been said that the Martini Henry kicks like a mule. This is not strictly true. It kicks like a bad-tempered Shire stallion that's just been bitten in a very sensitive place by an enormous and vindictive horsefly. For this reason, unless the butt is held tightly into the shoulder and the right thumb is placed on the receiver thumb rest, severe bruising of shoulder and nose can result. Shooting them from a standing or seated position isn't too bad, but shooting prone for any length of time can be uncomfortable. The Martini Henry is a very potent rifle that, due to its flat trajectory and devastating impact, proved very effective in battle, causing horrendous wounds. Writing after the defense of Rorke's Drift in 1879, Lieutenant John Chard VC recalled that some of the bullet wounds were very curious. One man's head was split open as if by an axe. Another had been hit between the eyes, the bullet carrying away the whole of the back of his head, his face perfect as if it were a mask, only disfigured by a small hole made by the bullet. Having said that, the garrison started the action with 20,000 rounds of ammunition and expended all but 900 to cause approximately 800 casualties, Zulu estimate, among the attackers, so the general standard of marksmanship must have left a lot to be desired. After the battle, the men's trigger fingers were bleeding and their shoulders and biceps were red raw, which is hardly surprising after keeping up such a rate of fire with this powerful rifle. Kipling and the Martini Henry. Rudyard Kipling mentions the Martini Henry in at least two of his poems, and it also features in his novel The Man Who Would Be King, 1888, set in Kafiristan, a remote corner of Afghanistan. In 1883, the 1,000-yard shoot had been taken out of the Queen's Prize at Wimbledon, and 900 yards was substituted in its place as, in the previous year, half the shots from the Martini Henry had completely missed the target at 1,000 yards. In The Young British Soldier, 1895, Kipling makes reference to this occasional inaccuracy, thought to be caused by the Henry barrel's tendency to become fouled with powder deposits in the sharp angles of its rifling. When half of your bullets fly wide in the ditch, don't call your Martini a cross-eyed old bitch. She's human as you are, you treat her as sitch. And she'll fight for the young British soldier. In Fuzzy Wuzzy, 1890, Kipling salutes the fighting spirit of the Sudanese Bajir warriors while suggesting that they never stood a chance against the Martini Henry. These, incidentally, are the same warriors that, according to Corporal Jones, don't like it a pem. Then there's to you, Fuzzy Wuzzy, and the missus and the kid. Our orders was to break you, and of course we went and did. We sloshed you with martinis, and it wasn't hardly fair. But for all the odds again you, Fuzzy Muse, you broke the square. Conclusions. Although it proved itself in action and was well loved by those who relied upon it for their survival, the Martini Henry had one major shortcoming in common with all other single-shot rifles, and that was its relatively slow rate of fire of around 10 rounds per minute, against which determined attacks by overwhelming numbers could prevail. This is what happened at Isandlwana when 858 British soldiers and 471 African allies were killed, while Zulu losses amounted to around 1,000 dead. Once the self-contained centerfire cartridge had been perfected, the next imperative was to produce a magazine-fed weapon capable of delivering a much faster rate of accurate, aimed fire. In the next and final article in this series, we will look at the weapon that replaced the Martini Henry, the famous .303 Lee Metford magazine rifle, and the Lee Enfield that succeeded it. If you would like to see the Snider and the Martini Henry superbly demonstrated by a very knowledgeable and entertaining Canadian, I would recommend watching British Muzzleloaders on YouTube. Here's a link, Snider v. Martini Henry. Copyright Tom Pudding 2019.